set your hearts on meditating and listening to the Dhamma as well. And so bring your mind to a state of peace, because if you're listening to the Dhamma with a peaceful mind, then you can gain a clear or a more clear understanding of what you're listening to. And if your bhārami, your spiritual perfections, has reached a suitable degree already, then when you're contemplating the Dhamma, then you can know into the Dhamma, see into the Dhamma, see it with clarity. So there's no need to wonder for a sotapanna, a stream enterer, do they need to have this level of samadhi to reach that state or that level of samadhi? We just understand that in order for wisdom to arise, in order for this clear seeing and knowing to come up, it shows that the mind needs to have a foundation of enough peace. In order for sila, samadhi, and panya, this virtue, this firm, peaceful mind and wisdom, to come together, we call magga, samaki, so the path in harmony. So like I've explained very frequently, there's a time I listened to the Dhamma and saw into emptiness. And so it's just like all of you lay people right now. And sometimes when I sat in meditation, there was peace, and sometimes there wasn't peace. And so one day the mind would be peaceful, another day it's not peaceful anymore. But I carried on training, had this composure. And eventually when sitting, the body and the mind would reach a light, buoyant state. And there could be some, and this arose, this lightness came from a wisdom which arose from contemplation and thinking. So I'd feel this state of ease and comfort in the body, in the mind. And if that feeling grew, then it would be like the body was just floating in midair. And that state, what that shows is that the samadhi is getting better. Usually, when I sat in meditation, I'd spread out this heart of loving-kindness first, use that as the first foundation of my practice. And then use a means of meditation which is really good for caring for our hearts, and that is the recollection of the Buddha, as Buddha Anusati. And so we have, it brings up this faith, this conviction, belief, which gives us the energy to push our minds to get us to practice. And to, because what the Buddha wanted was for us to not be heedless within our lives. That having been born, we must get old and get sick and then die. So therefore, we shouldn't be careless. But rather, we use this opportunity to seek out ways to build goodness. And so like this bhārami, this perfection of generosity, that may be a material form of generosity, but we do get something in return, and what that is a feeling within our hearts. So we exchange those physical things for non-physical things, which is this merit. And that merit is something that we're able to take with us past this life. Also, the demerit, the harmful deeds, that those too we take with us as well, but we try to not do those. So we try to abandon all demeritorious, all acts of bad karma, to nurture, cultivate skillfulness, and to bring the mind to purity. So like us right now, we're listening to the Dhamma. And so this is on the level of really practicing the Dhamma as well. that when we listen, the mind can turn radiant and can feel like Nibbana is very close by. And so that's what it was like when I listened to the teachings of Ajahn Chah, and that I could gain an understanding into what he said, and understand the nature of conventions and liberation, samuti and vimuti. And this reaches the very heart of the teachings, that all things are empty. And sometimes you may read a poem about this, like about how there's a tree and it was initially called one thing, but then they changed the name to be one that sounded more beautiful and following conventions. But we're able to do this because, in truth, the tree doesn't have a name. Perhaps we don't like the initial name, so we change it. It makes us happy. And so just like us, maybe we don't like the name that we were given, and then we change our name, and then we feel happy by that. And then some other people, they still call us by our old name, and we dislike that, because they don't know about this new name of ours. In the beginning, they just can remember our old name. And maybe they feel like using this new name, but they're not comfortable with that, because it's a habit of theirs to call us by the old name. But the truth is that we don't have a name. And that's true for all humans, all animals, all trees. So this is something that we can think about, we can contemplate. Or like chickens and ducks. So now we call that which goes quack quack, we call that a duck. That which goes cluck cluck, we call that a chicken. But if in the beginning, right from the time that they started coming up with these names, they turned it the other way around, and they called that which goes quack quack a chicken, and that which goes cluck cluck a duck, then at the present time we would be calling it like that as well, and be calling our chickens ducks and ducks chickens. And so this is just following the conventions of language. But the reality is that they don't have names, that we come up with these things in order to be able to refer to them. So therefore we should look and see how all things are empty. And all things here means all material things, all immaterial things, all mental things. And so like this form, it's something that's material. And there are forms which we use, some which just arise from nature and some which humans have created. But all of those are form. And then nama, the immaterial things, that's the feelings and the memories, the proliferations, and also the ability to receive sense, experience, or to cognize. And so all of these, or feelings, and these are nama, and both of these are empty. And all emptiness is Buddha, and just that. But these minds of ours, they have so many things to them, they create all kinds of things. And because this mind, it has avijja, that it's currently deluded. And so all of us really are trying to seek out that which doesn't die. But we don't know how to do that. We're not aware how this body which we attach to, we don't want to be separated from it. We want for it to live forever, but it's not possible for that to happen. But whenever we get things, then we want to keep those things. But the truth is not that way. Because these things which we're attaching to, they're sankharas. These are fabricated things. And so sankhara is anything which is fabricated, which has conditions giving rise to it. And these are things which just can't stay forever. And there are these physical things, these mental sankharas as well, and all of them are in a state of change. They arise, they stay for a bit, and then they cease. When they arise from causes and conditions, and then they go away. And this is what the Buddha taught us, wasn't it? So when the Buddha taught, he taught his direct disciples, his awakened disciples, they listened to that and became arahants. And then next, they went to spread that. So Venerable Asaji then taught Sariputta. And what he taught was that all dhammas, all things, have conditions for their arising. And the Buddha taught those causes and conditions, and he also taught the cessation of those causes and conditions as well. Yang kinchi samutaya dhammang sapantang nirodha dhammanti. And through just this teaching, Sariputta, who had ordained as a wanderer outside of the Buddha Sasana, was able to understand and to see the Dhamma. What that shows is that while he was listening, he must have had samadhi in order for that clarity of understanding to arise, for the mind to be able to come together like that. So when we listen to the Dhamma, that if the mind is gathered, then we can understand clearly. So just like when I listen to the teachings of Ajahn Chah, I can understand into emptiness, understand how really, in truth, there isn't a glass there, that it doesn't have a name, it doesn't have a size, and these things are just conventions. My mind was in a still state, and there was a brightness to it, and so you can understand into the Dhamma. So when we listen, we're also practicing the Dhamma as we do that. We may read about the Dhamma, you may go to places where there are Dhamma teachings, you may recite verses of Dhamma. And so in some traditions they recite the Heart Sutra, that form is emptiness. Well, that shows that there isn't really any genuine form there. And so emptiness is form. And so if form is emptiness, then emptiness must be form. And the same is true for the feelings and the memories and the thoughts and sense consciousness. So we can recite this over and over until the mind becomes peaceful in a state of samadhi. And then we can bring up this teaching of emptiness again, anatta. And so that form is anatta, it's not self. Feeling is not self. Memory is not self. It's thoughts, mental formations are not self. Sense consciousness is not self. And this is within the Anattalakkhana Sutta. So we can compare these teachings. And through them, you can know and awaken to the Dhamma, just like the five ascetics did. And so this is a really important heart of the teachings. We also really need to be caring for our minds, training our minds. And a way of doing that is through Buddhanusati, the recollection of the Buddha. This can look after our hearts. And also metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. So it's loving kindness and compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. We set this determination that today I'm not going to get angry with anyone. I'm going to love other beings. But this isn't a love with defilement and craving, but it's a genuine love. Seeing how the things that people do which are wrong, that really it's ignorance and craving and clinging which does that. And if people do a lot of these, then when they die, they fall into a lower realm, maybe an animal realm. And that's because in the present moment, the mind is on the level of an animal. Because there's delusion there. There's this delusion there, there's a sense of self there, being a being, an individual, giving rise to me and you. So what we need then is a mind with wisdom. So like we go and seek out a tree in order to use that to build, that we need to seek out a tree that has heartwood to it. And then from that we're able to build, to make posts and planks and make a home. And so the heart is like this as well, that we need to look into it, we need to study, we need to see all the objects within the mind. And so we see how if we have cultivated kindness and compassion, sympathetic joy and equanimity, then when people do things that would, in order to make us angry, they're trying to make us angry, but we don't get angry. We don't go off into loving people or despising other people. But we maintain this kindness towards ourselves and to all beings. That if we can help out, then we do so, following the resources that we have. You can also give a anumodana, and so rejoicing in the good deeds of others. That some people, they do this, that when they see many people gathered together like this, meditating together, they say sadhu. I think the sadhu, sadhu in their mind, which means good, this is a good deed, a good action, well done. Or when offering food to the monks, and they see other people doing that, then they think, oh, this is really good, this is something that I rejoice in. This is something that the Sangha, the monastics, can do as well. When on arms round, and they can externally be composed and still, but within the mind, when receiving even just a spoon of rice, think to themselves, sadhu, sadhu, that I'm happy for the goodness that this person is creating. And so this is a way of us cultivating our minds as well. And some people do this. So when they meditate, they can sit and think sadhu, sadhu, sadhu many times. And they can do this all throughout the day. And when seeing other people do good deeds, they think to themselves, sadhu, this is a good deed. Or like us meditating together, we think to ourselves, sadhu. So this is mudita citta. So this heart which has sympathetic joy, it rejoices in the happiness and the good things that people are receiving. And so we're not getting jealous, because it's the nature of our minds that they like to compete with one another. And this ignorance, it's fond of jealousy, giving rise to jealousy and ill will, because there's the self there. And we don't want to share. And it's just normal for the mind to be in this state. But that's why we need to come and to train our minds well, to be following up on them, looking after them. What's the mind like right now? What's it thinking about? What kind of things is it concocting? If the mind is proliferating, then it's doing that through delusion. So when we come to meditate, we sit still and we establish our mindfulness, looking over our minds, knowing when it starts proliferating, that it's deluded already. And when the mind is in a still state and it receives something or receives an object, then it knows that object for what it is. And it's able to separate out from that, able to see the Dhamma, able to understand the Dhamma. And this is bhavana mayapanya, so the wisdom that arises from cultivating the mind. And so I had an experience that we can use to contemplate, that Ajahn Chah, he had once given this teaching that wherever it is that we attach, we will suffer right there. There's this upadana there. So the things that we like, we attach to those. Things that we dislike, we also attach to those. If we like something, then we want to get more of that. If we dislike something, then we want it to go away. But there was a period of time when my mind could become peaceful very easily. And I felt like I didn't want to chant, because if I was chanting, then it would feel like that peace diminished and my samadhi would disperse. And so I was really liking developing samadhi. But one day this knowledge arose. Well, that's not how it is. That wherever it is that we attach, that we'll suffer right there. And when I gained that understanding, then I realized, well, I can chant, and that's okay. I can not chant, and that's okay as well. I can do both. And there was an ease to my heart then. So when we contemplate, you contemplate into death, see how life is not sure, and death is waiting right in front of us, then this can bring the mind into peace. And through this contemplation of the changing nature of conditions, their unsatisfactory nature, their not-self nature, and this is really close to wisdom. It can feel that way, and it can feel like it is wisdom, but really it's a means to bring the mind to peace. And so there was a period where I was doing this. And initially, this needs to come from sanya, as memory or perception first. But then through that, the mind gains peace and becomes still and quiet. And then that still, quiet place, then it's not giving rise to conceptions of beings. And so this happened to me when I was looking at a dead body. And then the mind started to think and proliferate. So I was thinking, well, who is this body? And the answer came, it's a police officer. And this was this feeling, or this proliferation, which came out of the mind. And the wisdom was on top of that and knew immediately what was happening. Because that mindfulness was strong. The mind had just come out of this still and peaceful place. Just come out of this place, wasn't creating any being, any person. And so through that knowledge into that creation of the mind, I was able to know and see the Dhamma. And so sometimes that it can just take looking at something, contemplating something. And it's like there's a great teacher, and as he was walking along, he saw this rice paddy, and he contemplated the rice crops, and he saw how they grow up, and then they produce these rice seeds, and then when those fall, then that's a seed for another crop to come up. And so he contemplated, and it's like how there's this seed of avijja, of ignorance, which makes us get born into this world. And then when we're born, then these defilements come up over and over again. And just through that, he was able to attain arahantship. There was, at the time of the Buddha, a bhikkhuni Patajara, and she was washing her feet. And then as she was pouring the water, and the water disappeared into the stones and the sand, and she could see how life is something which isn't sure, because that's something that she had known already. And seen how the things that we love, even those have to die to be separated from us. But then as she was washing her feet, she understood this really clearly, distinctly, that our lives are like this. As that water disappeared, you could see how life is not sure, but death is something that's sure. And then she could attain through the various levels of awakening, from Sotapanna, from stream entry to Sakadagami, as one's returner, Anagami, non-returner, and Arahant, as full awakening. And because her Bharami, her Samadhi, her wisdom had reached a full level already. So for us, no matter what posture we're in, whether we're standing, we're walking, we're sitting, lying down, we should be cultivating our minds, looking after our minds, protecting our minds. And as we do that, then one day an understanding will arise. And we should be on top of the mind's proliferations as well. When it starts doing that, then we ask ourselves, is this going to trick me? And we know that this is just about to trick us. That whenever we meet with any aramanas, there's any impression which appears for our minds that we don't follow that. If we can do that, what that shows is that we have this one who knows, caring for our hearts. And just like a child that has a caretaker and has its parents, and because it has a caretaker, it doesn't die, it doesn't get into accidents and get itself disabled. But if it doesn't have that, then it's a destitute child, an orphan. And so we need to be training our minds, caring for our minds. It's like when we listen to the Dharma, we should be meditating as well. To be sitting, cultivating our minds while we listen to the Dharma, and then an understanding can arise. And so for myself, there were some teachings of Ajahn Chah that I listened to many times. And some of them I listened to over 10 times. And on the first time, I listened and I thought, well, I really clearly understood this teaching. But then, as I listened to it another time, the understanding that I gained grew deeper and deeper. This wisdom would come up that allowed me to abandon, to let go. It was like through listening to his Dhamma that this pond of my mind would clear out and become this very clear water. It was like Nibbana was close by, because there was peace in the mind. And the mind wasn't stirred up, because the things which would make it stirred up weren't present. So in that state, then we can see into the Dhamma. And so may you set your hearts on listening to these Dhamma talks. And perhaps for some of you, when I'm speaking in Thai, you don't understand what I'm saying. And then if that's the case, then just sit and cultivate samadhi instead. And perhaps some of you can understand Thai. And so when you listen to the Thai, you listen to that, understand. And then when you listen to the English, then you can sit in meditation. Well, we're listening to the language that you understand, and we carry on contemplating as we're listening to it. And we don't understand, then we just bring our minds back to samadhi. There's no need to think or worry about, you know, what language it is, whether I understand it or not. No need to get agitated, but just cultivate your samadhi first. And so may you set your heart on this.